Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Since American troops first touched down in Afghanistan and Iraq after 9/11, enemy forces have found a powerful weapon in the IED, or improvised explosive device. During the height of the war in Iraq, there were nearly daily reports of casualties.
They died when a powerful bomb exploded in a field they were patrolling on foot.
A roadside bomb that killed 10 Marines and injured 11 more.
He was one of two airborne troops from Fort Campbell killed during combat in Afghanistan. The Pentagon says both soldiers died after their vehicle was hit by an explosive.
Since 2001, IEDs have killed or injured about 28,000 American troops. The U.S. military launched a counterattack by spending $17 billion on technology to jam the devices. And the Pentagon is working on a next-generation jammer that could not only prevent bombs from blowing up, but also locate them, eavesdrop on the enemy, and disrupt their drones. Noah Schachtman got an inside look at this new technology, still under development. He's a contributing editor at Wired Magazine, where he also writes for the Danger Room blog. Noah, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
Just remind us first how deadly these IEDs have been.
The toll they've taken is absolutely unbelievable. At the peak, these homemade bombs were injuring 30 soldiers a day in Iraq. And that's not even counting the civilian toll.
And Noah, before we get to this new technology, remind us how the insurgents built IEDs back in 2001, 2002, when Americans first arrived in Afghanistan.
Right. Well, the U.S. forces that touched down in Afghanistan in late 2001 were, you know, very high tech. They had the latest in night vision and drone technology. And the insurgents, on the other hand, went very low tech. They took whatever they could find, kind of scrapyard, Radio Shack kind of items, hooked them up to old Soviet-era landmines, and created these improvised bombs. And some of those bombs, they would set off remotely through things as simple as like a kid's remote-controlled truck or one of those garage door openers. They'd use those simple devices to set off bombs remotely. And that little radio control device allowed the militants to be hundreds of yards away, you know, and basically in relative safety while American troops were in harm's way. It was the beginning of a remote control war.
And what defense did Americans have against these type of bombs?
Well, at the beginning, nothing. I mean, there was no defense. The U.S. had a couple of simple jammers that would basically send out the same signal or a similar signal to the remote control devices, but they were very limited. And there wasn't much that U.S. troops could do when one of these bombs was under their feet. So there was kind of a crash program to build some next-generation jammers that could cope with these homemade bombs. And so they took a system that would listen for that remote control threat. It would record the signal itself, and then would rebroadcast the signal, but slightly off, confusing the receiver. And the wife of the guy who built this thing, she was very into Wiccan and witchcraft, so they called the device the Warlock.
But what were some of the early problems with it?
The Warlock was a modified version of a different system, and it took its time to record those sounds and to rebroadcast them out. It took a couple of seconds. But these garage door openers, these key fobs, you know, like what you open your car door with, those happen in milliseconds. So the Warlock wasn't quite quick enough to keep up with the remote triggers.
You write that by 2006, 15,000 troops were wounded by IEDs, but then the U.S. began to develop better technology. What was it, and why was it more effective?
Well, it was more effective because it could cover a broader range of threats. So it could cover those garage door openers, it could block those key fobs that open up your car door, and it could also stop cell phones, it could stop walkie-talkies, which were later used in Iraq to be much more sophisticated triggers. In addition, it used a variety of jamming techniques to listen in for different triggers and to counter them.
In fact, while traveling in Iraq in 2005, you believe a jammer helped save your life. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. I was with a bomb squad based out of Baghdad, and they went out on a call near the Abu Ghraib prison where there was a suspected bomb in the middle of the road. It turned out to be nothing, but the insurgents there had a trick, which was they'd put a fake bomb in the middle of the road, and then they'd have a second bomb nearby that would hit the bomb squad when it showed up to help. And that's exactly what happened here. There was a mobile phone connected to an artillery shell, and it would have been, you know, it would have blown the Humvee to smithereens had it gone off. But it didn't go off, and that was the weird thing. And it really seems like the reason why it didn't go off is because the jammer blocked the signal that was supposed to trigger it.
Wow, very, very lucky.
Yeah.
What happened overall with IED attacks as the war moved on?
Well, what happened was the second, really third generation of jammers really started to bring the IEDs down in late 2006 and early 2007, the remote-controlled IEDs, excuse me. And so the insurgents had to change tactics. They went to basically hardwiring their bombs to their triggers. Think of it like those old Wile E. Coyote cartoons where the coyote had to push down on the plunger before something exploded,
mm-hmm.
kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd use, the new term for it is pressure plates, but the old term is landmines, you know, something you'd step on and it'd explode. Those were, in Iraq, were less effective because an insurgent had to stick around to push that plunger. But they found a new home in Afghanistan, and that's where all of the technology that the U.S. built up over years and years kind of all of a sudden didn't count for anything.
Yeah, because I understand that when the U.S. stepped up its presence in Afghanistan, they saw a spike in IED attacks with the number of U.S. troops killed by roadside bombs soaring by 60% last year. What's so different about what insurgents are using in Afghanistan to what they're using in Iraq?
Well, first of all, they've gone very low-tech in Afghanistan. The terrain favors low-tech. There's not roads where U.S. troops can drive their armored trucks down. The bombs are planted on these like muddy little roads where no trucks can drive. And they don't have these remote control triggers like they did in Iraq. They're just set off by someone stepping on them. What's more, they're not even metal, so a metal detector can't pick them up. They're made of wood and fertilizer, so they're very hard to detect. They're in hard-to-spot places, and many of the protections that the U.S. spent billions and billions of dollars to perfect really don't matter at all. And so you've seen a real spike in both bombs and the casualties caused by those bombs. And at the moment, there doesn't seem to be much you can do to stop them.
And Noah, you recently were invited to visit the facilities of a defense contractor, ITT, that's working on that. What are they developing and why is it better than what we have now?
Tucked behind the Meadowlands, which is where the New York Giants and New York Jets play, just outside of New York City, there's a little suburban office park, you know, with a Olive Garden and a Target. And tucked in the middle is this, you know, nondescript building. But inside that nondescript building is something quite secret, and that's these next-generation jammers. And I did get an opportunity to go inside. What's interesting about these jammers is a couple things. Number one, they can be networked together. So they can not only stop a trigger from going off, they can sense that that trigger is happening and tell the rest of the network that that's going on. That means that it's not just a jammer. It then becomes an intelligence collection device. And that same cell phone that might trigger a bomb one day can also be used to communicate the next. So it's both a spy tool and a defensive mechanism at the same time.
Well, how much will it help, though, with the type of explosive devices being used in Afghanistan, as you say, being set off by somebody stepping on a homemade fertilizer bomb?
Yeah, that's the trick. As the U.S. climbs up and up the technology ladder, the insurgents are descending further and further down, and the two don't always match up. And so really these next-generation jammers aren't really for Afghanistan, as crazy as that sounds. It's for some other war.
Then what's the point?
You know, the rest of the world has seen how effective these homemade bombs have been against U.S. troops. And so the thought is that every war from here on in is going to have an IED component to it. And so you better build a jammer that can last for these wars in the future. And so the U.S. spent tens of billions of dollars on jammers because they're always trying to keep up with the next threat. When there was garage door openers setting off the bombs, they built one kind of jammer. When it went to walkie-talkies, they built a second. When the walkie-talkies went to cell phones, they built a third. And when it went to more advanced networks on cell phones, they built a fourth. At the peak in Iraq, there are 14 different models of jammers operating at once, and they would often cancel each other out. The jammers would actually try to block each other. So that was not only a tactical problem, a problem for soldiers, but it was also a huge waste of money, too. And so this is an attempt by the Pentagon, really for the first time, to build some kind of protection device that everybody will be able to use everywhere, and it'll just be one kind instead of this kind of menagerie of electronic warfare.
The Pentagon has spent a lot of money in trying to protect soldiers from IEDs once they explode, the armored Humvees, the gear that they're all wearing.
Right.
Comparatively, have they poured enough money into just jamming the signal so it won't go off?
They've put a ton of money into these jammers, a ton. And the tricky part is you've got to jam selectively, right? The U.S. today could shut off all cell phones in Afghanistan if it wanted to. But then, you know, we're trying to grow an Afghan economy, too, at the same time. And, you know, mobile phone technology has become a key component of how people do business. So you can't just shut off all the cell phones. So it's a real tricky balance on how that works. The thing that's happening right now where the Joint IED Defeat Organization, that's the, like, cumbersome name for the Pentagon group that's responsible for stopping IEDs, they've put a lot of their money into something called defeating the network, which is basically trying to break up the groups of insurgents who build bombs, who traffic in bomb parts and place them. Basically, a lot of the missions that you see, like with bin Laden getting killed, that's happening over and over and over again in Afghanistan, where special operations teams are taking out insurgents, mid-level operatives, top operatives, even low-level guys, pretty much every night. And it's those targeted raids that they hope will eventually break the bomb-making chains. But so far, the bombs keep getting placed and soldiers keep getting blown up.
Well, looking forward, you know, you've been inside a contractor on the cutting edge of jamming IEDs. What are the IEDs of the future they're trying to predict how to jam?
Well, here's the thing. All our cell phones today, right, they all have technology in them to overcome interference when we walk in between two buildings, when we hop from one network to another, when we go underground inside. But those same techniques that are used to overcome interference make the cell phones a very potent trigger for a remote-controlled bomb. They make them very difficult to jam. And so you need very sophisticated techniques in order to stop them. Basically, you can't just stop the signal anymore. What you've got to do is you've got to be able to stop the particular software that the cell phone uses to connect one to the other. And that's extremely difficult. And that's really what these next generation jammers at their core are going to be about.
So every time we see an advancement in cell phone technology, you have to think about what that means for remote setting off of IEDs.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, you know, every new edition of the iPhone or the BlackBerry is like a potential weapon.
Noah Shachtman is contributing editor at Wired Magazine, where he also writes for the Danger Room blog. He's speaking to us about a new wave of technology to disrupt IEDs in war zones. Noah, thank you.
Thanks for having me.